All right. You can open your Bibles to Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 26. Hopefully your Bible is getting a crease in Luke. Mine is. Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 26. Now, this is a story that barely needs an introduction because it has awesome things. It has 1,000 demons approximately, and you're just like, demons? That's totally, maybe you're like freaked out a little bit. Maybe you should be a little freaked out. Or you're like, whoa, this is a cool story. At least, you know, this is the stuff of like Hollywood movies, and you know, it's a little freaky. It is October. This is kind of like our October fright special. Woo, we're getting all freaky. And it also has a herd of livestock, 2,000 pigs, which is close to my heart because I love livestock. It has one man, one Lord, one evangelist, and let's go. Woo. Luke 8, chapter 26. Oh, Luke chapter 8, verse 26. I always say chapter when I mean verse. Then they sailed to the country of the Gerasenes. And if you remember our last time, Jesus sleeping on the boat in the storm. So they got through the storm, good sailing, sailed across the Sea of Galilee, or they call it a lake sometime. They go across the Sea of Galilee, and now they are in the country of the Gerasenes, which is important for one fact. And that is, they have crossed over into Gentile territory. So the Jews, the good, upright people of God, and then those dirty Gentiles, like all of us there across the lake. Jesus is going into Gentile territory here. And verse 27, when Jesus had stepped out on the land, it's sort of like just as he's stepping off, there met him a man from the city who had demons, plural. For a long time, he had worn no clothes. So to make this story even like crazier, he steps off the boat. As soon as he steps off the boat, a naked guy, raving mad, runs up to him. Now, this is getting really strange and weird, but it gets weirder from here. And he had not lived in a house, but among the tombs. A little later on, we're going to hear Jesus describe this as an unclean spirit. Now, usually when we hear something, unclean spirit, we just drift by. We just, our brain says demon. But unclean spirit here is very important because we have to think of the conception of the world in ancient Israel is that there is the holy things. There's the holy things. The most holy is God lives in the Holy of Holies. There's the temple where the priests in their holiness are. Then there's the Israelites who are supposed to be clean, and then there's like Israelites if they're unclean, and to be unclean doesn't mean you haven't had a bath. It doesn't have anything to do with hygiene or health, which is what we think. What it has to do with is your state before God. So if you're clean, you're able to worship God. If you're unclean, you can't worship God. And the reason why things that are unclean, and we think of like the Jewish food laws, like pork and stuff, but the real thing is things that are unclean are things that are connected with death. Things that are connected with death. So you can't eat animals that might feed off carcasses, which is one of the reasons you can't eat pigs or things of that are creepy, crawly things. You can't go worship God if you've just touched a dead body, even if it's a body of a relative. There's nothing morally wrong with, you know, having to move a dead body, and they realize that you have to do this, but you can't rightly go worship the God of life with the stench of death on you. And so this is a teaching tool to show how holy God is, how separate God is. So now, as Jesus crosses into Gentile territory, into an unclean place, he meets the naked man who is possessed by an unclean spirit who is living among the tombs. And he's living among the tombs because unclean spirits are drawn to unclean things. And there's nothing more unclean than dead bodies. So the unclean spirit is like drawn to death and away from everything holy, and we still see how evil demonic powers are repelled from holiness, and sin in our lives tends to corrupt it and go as far away from God as possible, and we see the demon doing the same thing. So I'm going to talk a little bit about demons in this sermon. And point one, and this is rather obvious here, is that demons exist. Not everybody believes demons exist, but, you know, I don't know. I won't prove that demons exist, but there are, like, you know, mothers who murder their children. Demons existing doesn't have, isn't too hard to convince me. And here it is in the Bible. There are demons. They're going to talk in a second. Also, the guy coming up naked, which is really weird, and it's nudist. They point to Genesis 2 as like Genesis, like nudist. I point to Luke 8:27. Like, this is what nakedness does. All right, verse 28. When he, the man, maybe the man with the demons, saw Jesus, he cried out. And this isn't like a vocal, this is like a cry of pain, like, ah! And fell down before him and said with a loud voice, "What do you have to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." She cries out in pain. The holiness of Jesus invading his territory is like painful to him. You can almost feel him like withering, like, you know those villains when they fall into like a vat of acid and they're like, I'm melting, like the Wicked Witch in the Wizard of Oz, like melting like that. That is how they are. They're like, they're melting away. He falls down, recognizing Jesus' absolute power and authority over him, and says, "I beg you, do not torment me." Which implies he thinks like torment is coming in Luke, or in Mark's gospel. It's like, "Do not, have you come to torment me before the time?" The demon recognizes there will be a time of torment, and the demon fears this intensely. He asked, in the ESV it has, "What have you to do with me?" And this is a figure of speech. Literally, it is, "What to you and to me? What to you and to me?" Which is kind of like, he's like, "What are you doing here, Jesus? Like, this is the Gentile territory. This is my territory of darkness. What are you doing here?" But Jesus, as the God of life, is the God of the whole world. And that's one thing we have to see here, is that he's going to every place, even the dark places, maybe especially the dark places. Verse 29. For he had, notice the past tense here, for he, Jesus, had commanded the unclean spirit, there's the unclean spirit, to come out of the man. For many a time it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the desert. So Jesus had commanded the demon to come out. And this is what Jesus does. Jesus meets people who are oppressed by demonic influences. He commands, says, "Come out of them," and they come out. And this time, you get the feeling that the demon is maybe coming out, but very slowly, kind of like when my kids, you know, I tell them to go clean up their room, and they start moving like. And so the demon is like inching his way out, but it's still holding on for dear life, because the demon is afraid that it's going to end up in a fiery lake of fire for all eternity, which is pretty bad, and the demon wants to put that thing off. Which you think is like crazy, like, why is a demon being so senseless? But then again, how many times have you ever put something off that you knew you had to do eventually? Yeah. Now, this little parenthetical statement about the man is showing us that this isn't quite a normal demonic oppression. There's something like deeper and more difficult going on here. And this demon had, first thing, for many time it had seized him. It's kind of like it took control of him in a certain way, like it oppressed him more strongly. And you get the impression here, this person was like kind of carried away for a while and then was back maybe home and then was carried away again. And you get the that this demonic oppression can come and go a little bit. Next, he broke the chains that held him. And so this demonic influence gave him supernatural strength. And you can kind of see here why in a lot of cultures, especially cultures deal in witchcraft and all sorts of paganism, demons can almost seem like a friend because, hey, who doesn't want to be really strong? You can do lots of awesome things. I have the power and all sorts of things like that. You think demons can give, I call them pseudo-spiritual gifts, things that seem like a valuable thing. You can make a bargain there. This is like the deal with the devil. Three, when this would happen, he was driven by the demon into the desert. I think desert here is more, it's more thinking of empty places by himself. And so the demon isolated the man. And so this is something that, I mean, demons don't just do this. Sin does this. You know, everything opposed to God. God builds the community of the saints together. Sin, Satan, the devil, demons isolate people, drive them away from community, away from where people can try to help them. So, what does this passage teach us about demons? One, demons exist, okay? For all this stuff to be here, they have to exist. Second, demons fear God, and don't overlook this fact, because Jesus shows up. This demon isn't just like, oh, I'm going to take on Jesus. This demon is like, please don't hurt me, please don't hurt me. Like, this is not like a spiritual battle. This is a spiritual surrender with some begging for terms. Third, demons are drawn to death. They're looking for things that are opposed to God's order. They're fleeing from life. They're drawn to death. Fourth, demonic oppression can come and go. So we see this, it seized him. It can be intermittent in ways. Five, demons can give pseudo-spiritual gifts. And we're going to see in other parts of the Bible where there's fortune-telling demons. And this is his thing. So this is a demon that has like this sort of extra human insight into things that are going on. And that's another thing that, you know, entraps people, because we all want knowledge. We all want to know, hey, you know, what about my dead relative or stuff? And we, you know, maybe if God isn't revealing us, you know, we'll go to the other side, see if they give us a better deal. And these things can become very dangerous. And lastly, demons isolate people. Now, I know that text is too small for people to read, so we'll flip it over to the next one. C.S. Lewis, I think, has good advice here. And he says, there are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about devils. One is to disbelieve their existence, and be like, la-la-la, don't need it, I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know how people go through the world thinking, you know, that the devil doesn't exist. You know, that seems incredible to me, but there are people who do that. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. And people can get so focused on casting out the devil that they forget about the power of God. And that, in certain Christian circles, that can become a very dangerous thing, and we're going to see maybe a little bit of that as we go on. It is important for each one of us to know, as we approach this, and it seems like fearful kind of things, it's scary, and we're in the month of Halloween, but if you are a child of God, he that is in you is greater than he that is in the world. And when you show up in the Spirit of God, to where there's demonic powers, they are not making you afraid. Not they shouldn't. They are afraid of you. Jesus Christ in you is the hope of glory. Jesus is in you. They're afraid when you show up, just like this demon is coming, and they're just like falling down, like, please don't hurt me, please don't hurt me. That's the same kind of power that we have when we go into places of spiritual oppression. So we need not fear, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, because God is with us. Verse 30. Then Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion, for many demons had entered him." Now, this is weird because we have lots of stories in the Bible about Jesus casting out demons, and this is like the only one where he asked him his name. And it is a little bit illustrative, too, because Jesus is like, "What is your name?" And the demon is like, "Legion, because we're many." Now, legion isn't actually a name. It's a description. And this is very illustrative because, you know, don't go asking the devil for clarification on things because the devil lies. The demons lie. And the demon here is kind of blustering to get away, to like sidetrack from the truth and maybe bluster a little bit and say legion refers to a unit of 1,000 troops in the Roman army. And so I don't know if there's a 1,000 demons. It doesn't really say, and you know, again, we're not taking the devil's word for it. But he's saying, you know, there's a lot of us, a little bluster here. There's a lot of us, but it's a little bit of bluster, but he's still cowering in fear. So it's a little bit of a, you know, oh, okay, I won't say that. All right. I was going to say it's like a little guy in a fight. So the little guy, like, ah, we're talking big. But anyways, that's the demon here. The spiritual battle here between even, if you take his word, don't have to, 1,000 demons and one Jesus is not a fight. It is Jesus 10 out of 10 times. And the one Jesus confronting this unlikely man, demon-oppressed, Gentile, unclean, even with 1,000 demons, this one man is going to be delivered. And again, in the Gospel of Luke, for time after time, we see the gospel of Jesus Christ coming to the most unlikely of places. And it's encouragement that we get again and again that the gospel of Jesus Christ grows in unlikely places, and we should be bold to reach out into dark places to people we think, oh, they're never going to say, because this is where the gospel takes root and grow. One of my good friends, they've been witnessing in the park in Ottawa. I think Ottawa, you know, really, you know, what good could ever be in Ottawa? And, you know, and there are people like coming to Jesus in the park in Ottawa, you know, people being freed from addiction and bondage. It's amazing. Anyways, you can ask me about it if you want more detail. Verse 31. And they begged him. They begged him. And so this is not like negotiation here. This is begging. And they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss. It's like the lake of fire. Now a large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him to let them enter these. So he gave them permission. Now this is the weirdest part about this story. Because, Jesus, why don't you just banish the demons into the abyss? Like, to hell with the devil. Like, just get it over with right now. But he doesn't. Why? Is it beyond his power? I don't think so. The demon certainly doesn't think so. God is going to one day send them into the lake of fire. Why not now? Is Jesus moved by the devil's plea, by the demon's plea? I don't think so either. And Jesus isn't convinced by the devil. He's like, "Hey, I'm going to be a good boy this time." After all, it's going to be like two sentences, and the demon's still going to be wreaking death and destruction along the way. I think there's one answer, and that answer is that God, in his wisdom, still has a purpose for these creatures. A purpose that these demons will no doubt mean for evil, and yet God will ultimately use for his good. God will ultimately use for his good. And I think we're going to see some of the I think we're going to see maybe some of the reason really quick. So Jesus allows the demons to leave the man and go into the pigs, which ironically is a fitting place for unclean spirit to go to the pigs, the prototypical unclean animal. So verse 33. Then the demons came out of the man. I don't know how it looked, but I'm imagining like, it probably wasn't like that, but, and entered into the pig. Some people doubt that animals can be possessed by demons, but those people haven't dealt with many animals. And especially sheep. And then the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. When the herdsmen saw what had happened, they were like, oh man, we are in big, big trouble. They fled and told it in the city and in the country, because they're like, yeah, really, it was the demons, not us. We didn't like mess up our job. The unclean spirit is always driving at unclean things. They're the opposite of pure worship of God. And what is more unclean than a pig? A dead pig. And now they're like in the pig ghosts or whatever. Yikes. This is a creepy sermon. And yet, we have the dead pigs, but we have the free man. Which is a beautiful thing, because here we have this man who's now going to be in his right mind. They're going to get him some clothing. He is free and following Jesus at the low cost of some pigs that were, in a way, sacrificed for his freedom, which is a kind of parable about how Jesus takes on uncleanliness, nakedness, sin, death on the cross in our place, so that we too can be free from all this evil. Verse 35. It's really funny that that's not the end of the story. You think, oh, it's good. And yet, then the people went out to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, they were... You're thinking they're like overjoyed, like this is a miracle that's just happened. But no, they're afraid. And those who had seen it told them how the demon-possessed man had been healed. They're like, it wasn't our fault that the pigs all died. It was the demons. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasene asked Jesus to depart from them. It's interesting. They take on the role of like the demon. Because the demon's like, go away. And they're like, hey, go away. For they were seized with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. So the man is healed, sitting at the feet of Jesus, learning. And all the people can be worried about is their pigs. Now, a herd of 2,000 pigs, which we get in Mark's gospel, the number, is a significant financial investment. It is a lot of money. It's like a bank account, boom, drained. They see this person and they're like, well, you know, I'd rather have my pigs back than to see this person freed from the demon. That's really what they're saying. We do see maybe a little bit of Jesus' purpose in letting the demons remain here. God was giving to these people a test to see if they cared more about Jesus or their pigs. To see if they could care more about the person, this person created in the image of God, or their property. It's a tragedy that they did care more about their property, and it's something that we have to think about. You know, if we walked outside and someone had taken a baseball bat and smashed the back windows out of every car in the parking lot, how many of us would care more about our car than that poor, unfortunate soul? How many of us might ask Jesus to leave our country if it meant our bank accounts getting drained? Do we care more about our homes, our cars, our investments than the man on the street oppressed by the devil? Verse 38. Now the man whom the demons had gone begged that Jesus might be with him. And so we get this big role reversal. He was like, with the demons, they're like, go away. The people are like, go away. He's like, please let me go with you. But Jesus sent him away. Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. And he went away, proclaiming throughout the whole city how much God had done for him. And here we have the story of the first, like, overseas evangelist for Jesus. Over the sea, an evangelist for Jesus. This is a great story, and this is a testimony that still God is working, where he takes people in the worst of all circumstances, Gentile sinner living among the tombs, running around naked, like, whoa, look at the scandal of this guy. He is the one heralding Jesus Christ. And we should be looking for the same. Now, in the end, we think what to make of this story. Now, this is a really creepy story because we read about the demon and we're just like, oh, the demon, this is the scariest thing. Ah, I'm afraid of the demon. Jesus isn't afraid of the demon. The guy with the 1,000 demons, he ends up all right. That is not the problem here. The problem ends up being a crowd of people who care more about their stuff than they care about Jesus. And so when we go through this next week and we think, I don't need to be afraid of the devil. If Christ is in me, he is greater than me, he is greater than he in the world. A devil can cause lots of mischief. Demons are not to be trifled with. And yet the more dangerous thing here was not the demon. It was the love of possessions that caused these people to turn away from Jesus, to send him away. And so we should consider this. Let's pray. Oh, Lord God, I pray that we would not be like the people of the Gerasenes, that we would put Jesus ahead of our possessions, that we would care more for an unfortunate soul than for our herd of cows. Help us to care like you care and live knowing the power of Jesus Christ to confront and defeat.